Hello, everyone, and welcome to the joint call hosted by California ISO and PacifiCorp to discuss the governance structure for both the Western Energy Imbalance Market and regional integration. My name is Christina Osborne. I work in the Stakeholder Engagement Group at the ISO, and I'll be facilitating the web conference today. I'd also like to introduce our co-presenters. I have Sarah Edmonds, who is the Vice President General Counsel of PacifiCorp's Transition, and also Stacey Crowley, who is the Vice President of ISO's Regional and Federal Affairs Division. Just to let you know, this call is being recorded, and we will make the recording available to stakeholders for those who weren't able to participate today, and also for those who would like to go back and review the presentation. We will make the recording available on both the ISO's website on the Regional Energy Markets page and on PacifiCorp's OASIS website. We will be taking questions. You can enter the question queue by pressing #2 on your telephone. Just a reminder to please state your name and affiliation before asking your question. The materials, the presentation today that you see on the website, or on the, excuse me, on the web service is on the ISO's public calendar. It's also available on the Regional Energy Markets webpage. So at this time, I'll just go ahead and turn it over to Sarah Edmonds.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking the time to attend this webinar today. PacifiCorp is serving in the role as facilitator for this presentation today. In our various engagements around the region as we have embarked on regional integration stakeholder discussion, we've had opportunity to speak with a range of stakeholders on many issues around regional integration, around market expansion, and the energy imbalance market. And one observation that we've had is because there are two tracks presently in place for governance structure around both the energy imbalance market and a potential future regional ISO, that it would be helpful for stakeholders to set a baseline and for us to provide some basic information and updates about where those two tracks are presently at and where they're headed in the future. And so to clarify in terms of the scope of today's webinar and the content that Stacey and I will be taking turns presenting on, we're not intending through this webinar to be kicking off a stakeholder process on either initiative. This really is to provide information, to provide our most recent updates on those two tracks for governance, and also to provide opportunity for questions to the extent that there are questions from stakeholders, and we can serve to clarify those differences. And so today we have planned for ample time to cover all of that material and also take your questions. As Christina noted, and as we move to the first slide in this deck, we're going to be covering both updates on governance in the energy imbalance market and also governance for the regional ISO, Regional Independent System Operator. We will note as we go along opportunities for questions. So we will signal that we'd like to take questions. We may do that after a group of slides where it makes sense, but we certainly have time at the end of this webinar. We may have ample time indeed for any questions that remain. And I'd also note in terms of content for today, we will have some discussion towards the end around key differences and distinctions between the two governance efforts that are underway and planned. And so with that, I will turn it to Stacey to lead off our discussion in the next slide on governance for the energy imbalance market.
Thank you, Sarah. Hello, my name is Stacey Crowley. I'm glad, thank you for participating today. It looks like we have a good group of people on the line. We first wanted to talk a little bit about the governance for the energy imbalance market. And first, I think it's important to note that with PacifiCorp being operating in the market for over a year and NV Energy's participation starting in December of last year, 2015, all participants have seen significant benefits out of the market. We recently posted our fourth quarter benefits report indicating just about $12.3 million in that quarter due to the energy imbalance market participation. That's significant, and what that does is just reminds us that there is value in this market, and it also may allow other utilities to see the value in that. And that goes to the reason, the importance of getting this governance structure implemented based on the recommendations from the EIM Transitional Committee and the approval of the ISO Board. It's even more important than ever to get this governance process implemented. So I want to go through a little bit about, as a reminder, what the governance structure looks like and where we are in the process of getting an EIM governing body in place, and a little bit about the schedule around that. So first, on slide four, just as a reminder, the Transitional Committee, over a little over a year's worth of effort, developed a governance proposal through a robust stakeholder process, ultimately approved by the ISO Board in September of last year, 2015, and developed a proposal that established the creation of an EIM governing body and several components underneath that. The basic elements of that proposal are that the EIM governing body would be composed of five independent or non-stakeholder members, and by that I mean it is these members have no financial interest in the energy imbalance ISO market in general. These are based on FERC requirements, and it's something that our current board operates under. In addition, those board members would serve three-year terms, staggered terms at first, and there would be no term limits. This board would have delegated authority over EIM market rules. That means that items that come in front of the EIM governing body would be related to EIM and would be established as such through the market design initiative process. Some items might be what we call hybrid items that have both energy imbalance market specific issues and other either real-time or other ISO market issues. Those are what we call hybrid. But ultimately, the EIM governing body would have delegated authority over EIM-related market rules, and the ISO board would approve any of those items through a consent agenda. If, for example, the board either approves or modifies a recommendation that came from the EIM governing body, it would go back to the EIM governing body for consideration. And I think Sarah will talk a little bit about that later on in terms of the differences between that and an overall ISO governing structure. The candidates for that EIM governing body are to be selected through a stakeholder nominating committee process and ultimately approved by the ISO board initially at the outset, and following the first establishment of the governing body, further candidates or vacancies would be filled by the approval of the EIM governing body itself, again through a stakeholder nominating process. I will talk in more detail about the nominating committee on the next slide. But there are several sectors that are have voting rights on this nominating committee, and several sectors that are participants but that don't have voting rights, and I'll go through that in a little bit more detail. It's important to note that there are two other components of the governance proposal that the EIM Transitional Committee put forward. The first is the creation of a body of state regulators. That body consists of one regulator from each state in which the EIM footprint operates. And that is meant to be an advisory body to the governing body and ISO board on matters of interest. It is as simple as that. It's really meant to acknowledge the fact that the utility commissioners do have an important role in the energy imbalance market. They've been engaged through the way, and in fact, they helped sort of at least start the discussion of how to look at the future of the electric grid in the West based on additional renewables and variable energy onto the grid. So they've been a big part of this all the way along. That body of state regulators has been formed. Commissioner Ann Rendell from the state of Washington is the chair of that board, and there are commissioners and at least one staff member from each state that is sort of sitting on this body of regulators. They have begun to have discussions that work is underway. The second piece of this is the establishment of a regional issues forum. This forum is meant to be a venue for discussion of energy and balance market related issues, which could include themes issues and impacts to neighboring balancing authority areas. This regional issues forum is intended to meet, at least as the transitional committee has proposed, at least three times a year, and it's composed of two sector liaisons of from five sectors. Those sectors include participating transmission owners, independent power producers, generators, and marketers, publicly owned utilities, public interest groups, and consumer advocate groups as one category, and neighboring balancing authority areas. Currently, the sectors have been discussing the selection of their liaisons. Many of the sectors have selected the liaisons, but when all liaisons have been selected, that would be 10 liaisons, they will get together and discuss the agenda and the data and logistics behind the first regional issues forum. So we're looking forward to that, and it really is meant to be a forum for discussion of issues related to Western energy. And in all cases, I wanted to just remind folks that the way the transitional committee made this proposal, they acknowledge that this is a growing and evolutionary process. And the proposal suggests that if there are any major significant changes that happen with the energy imbalance market, that the EIM governing body would be able to certainly reevaluate the structure of this of the governance. And as well, the Regional Issues Forum can be revisited after several meetings to make sure that it is providing value to the West and ensuring some open dialogue on these issues. So on the next slide, page 5, I wanted to go into a little bit more detail about the work of the nominating committee. The nominating committee was selected, self-selected by sectors. Each sector selected one representative to serve on this nominating committee. That committee has gathered and has had their first meeting in mid-January. I'll take this time to just go over both the sectors and the representatives to each of those sectors here for your information. The voting sectors include members from the EIM entities, and Sarah Edmonds here with Pacific Corp Transmission is a member, is the representative for that sector. Participating transmission owners is represented by Eric Little with Southern California Edison. The sector called suppliers and marketers of generation and energy service providers is represented by Mark Smith with Calpine, who also served on the EIM Transitional Committee and brings a deal of background and foundational information there. Randy Howard with the Northern California Power Agency serves as the representative for the publicly owned utility sector. And Commissioner Chairman Doug Little with the Arizona Corporation Commission serves as the representative from the body of state regulators. Those are the five voting members of the committee. There are three non-voting members, and they include Kevin Lynch, who is serving as a representative from the EIM Transitional Committee, and he is with Iberdrola Renewables. We have Governor Angelina Golitova, who is a member of the ISO Board of Governors, and Jennifer Gardner, who is with Western Resource Advocates, who serves as representative for the public interest and consumer advocate groups. So once again, they did gather. They have been working with this executive search firm. The name of the firm is Heidrick & Struggles. They have gathered and discussed really the process around the selection of these candidates and discussed some basic elements about the qualifications of candidates and really the schedule to get to the development of a slate. There was a deadline for candidates to be considered, we call them inbound candidates, and that is where any stakeholder, interested stakeholder, who believes that they have the name of a qualified candidate, they were able to provide that name either to their sector representative or to the executive search firm. That information was put into a market notice that was put out on January 20th, and since then we had the executive search firm has received many candidate suggestions, and they are currently going through the process of looking at their qualifications and determining if there's any conflicts of interest that go along with that financial independence. The nominating committee will meet later this month on a call to look at what the search firm calls the long list of candidates and discuss those candidates and ultimately develop a list of candidates to interview. Those interviews are scheduled to occur in mid-April with the goal of getting a slate of five members to the ISO Board of Governors by no later than their June board meeting, which is at the end of June. If that slate is approved by the board, that body would be seated immediately thereafter and their work would begin. So we thought it would be a good time to take questions at this point because we're going to kind of turn to the regional governance issues now. Christina, can you help us?
Sure, yeah, no problem. So, just a reminder, if you do have a question, you can enter the queue by pressing #2 on your telephone keypad. Please state your name and affiliation before asking your question. So, Colin, it looks like we have one hand raised. Can you go ahead and open the line?
Hi, this is Denise Parrish with Wyoming, and I just had a question about the meetings you were talking about with the Regional Issues Forum. Are those going to be public meetings, or are those meetings closed to only those who have been selected to be the participants in those forums, or can you talk a little bit about those who might have an interest who are not on any of the formal slates?
Yes, thank you very much, Denise. This is Stacey Crowley. Absolutely, the Regional Issues Forum meetings are intended to be public meetings open to all interested stakeholders. Their information, any materials, are also expected to be available to the public. The creation of the liaisons is essentially to really allow the stakeholders themselves to develop the agenda. This isn't an ISO-driven body. We wanted this to be a forum where the sectors and stakeholders could essentially develop the agenda and take charge of that meeting themselves. It really is for folks to participate as fully as they'd like to. So the liaisons are meant to just be a funnel where information can flow from all interested stakeholders to the liaisons who can help craft an agenda, get the logistics around a meeting and all that. But they are definitely expected to be public where materials would be available and stakeholders would be welcome to attend.
Any other questions, Denise?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Colin, we'll take the next question.
Hey, it looks like there are no additional questions in the queue at the moment.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on then.
Okay, thank you. This is Stacey Crowley again. I was going to skip to page 7, which is really the start of our discussion about the regional governance and the process that we would look to undertake. And it starts with the development and passage of Senate Bill 350, which the legislature approved and the governor signed back in October of 2015. It's called the Clean Energy and Pollution Reduction Act of 2015. And among other things, it sets the California goal to reach a 50% renewable portfolio standard by the year 2030. And it also recognizes that part of the ability to reach that goal can be facilitated by the expansion of the grid to be a regional grid. And so it lays out several steps and issues in that bill that are related directly to the ISO. It requires the ISO to prepare governance modifications and to study the impacts to a regional market. Though it provides for the transformation of the ISO into a regional organization, and there are several criteria or principles around that. First, it's meant to promote the development of the regional electricity transmission market in the West, but that must be done when it's in the best interest of California and its ratepayers. It also needs to maintain the standards for open meetings and public access to corporate records, which is what the ISO currently does and continues to operate under. And it states that the ISO would need to prepare a report the first year and then every 2 years thereafter for the affected states, documenting its furtherance of state and federal laws and regulations. So further on page 8, it also sets out the need to study the impacts of a regional market on California and in some cases the Western grid. And so slide 8 really lays out what's in statute in terms of the study work that needs to occur. And I'll go a little bit through the process that we've undertaken as well as refer to the meeting that occurred on February 8th on Monday to kick off that process. First, the language in the bill asks the ISO to study how a regional grid would create or retain jobs and other benefits to the California economy. It asks to look at the environmental impacts to California and elsewhere. It asks to look at the impacts to disadvantaged communities, to the emissions of greenhouse gas and other air pollutants, and to the reliability and integration of renewable energy resources onto the system. So the idea is that both the study work and the governance modifications would go and be presented at a public workshop hosted by the CPUC, and it would include the California Energy Commission as well as the California Air Resources Board, where the ISO would present these findings. So as I mentioned, the effort on the study work was kicked off on Monday, where we held a stakeholder meeting to present the basic assumptions and methodologies behind the study work. We're asking for stakeholder input on those methodologies and assumptions and have a team of very qualified consultants working on all those studies. Just briefly, I'll remind folks who weren't able to attend that call that the Brattle Group is the consultant that's sort of acting as the umbrella consultant to consolidate, collect, and kind of present the findings as a whole. We have E3 working on the renewable energy integration studies. We have Aspen Environmental working on some of the environmental impacts and greenhouse gas impacts to a regional grid. And Bayer Consulting out of Berkeley is performing the economic and job studies. So that work and the assumptions and methodologies are posted on our website, and the recording of that meeting is also available for folks to listen to if they weren't able to be on that call. But the second component of that, as I mentioned, is really the modification of the governance structure to reflect a regional grid. And that is it's an undertaking all unto itself. And as Sarah indicated, while this isn't really a technical kickoff to the meeting, it is meant to provide an indication of what we plan to do and the process as laid out in SB 350. So as we, after the passage of this bill, we had some initial conversations to try to understand and develop some basic guiding principles behind regional governance and change there. Those guiding principles are listed on page nine, and meant to really just be a framework and a starting point to look at a change to governance. First, and importantly, a guiding principle shall be that that whatever governance structure is developed would need to maintain compliance with all states' lawful policies within the ISO region, so that's California and other states, and maintain those same public processes, being open meetings, records availability, and the stakeholder processes that folks are used to with the ISO, where things are posted and there's the ability to have stakeholder input, et cetera. So the idea that all of the state's lawful policies and regulations would be adhered to is something that is important. Secondly, and again, like the EIM governing body, the board members would be independent of market participants and other stakeholders. Again, that is in regards to FERC requirements. And the thought is that a board maybe larger than the board we have now would be ideal, something 7 to 11 board members. There would be a preference for Western backgrounds, but the board as a whole should have a diverse set of experience and expertise. And finally, that the board selection process should be designed to meet the needs of all states within the ISO region and really look to make sure that that could expand or be scalable. And this is what we're looking at. And I'll add to that that it would be important to consider a role for the states in the selection process of any new governing body. So I'll stop there for questions. There's more to talk about on this, but I want to make sure that if there are questions now, we can get to them. Christina?
Sure, yeah. All right, it does look like there's a hand raised, so Colin, if you can go ahead and open up the phone line, just a reminder to please identify yourself first.
Hi, this is Ann Rundahl, Commissioner with the Washington Commission.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, and so I have a couple of questions, but I'll start with, you mentioned this isn't a technical kickoff. Will there be a straw proposal or a public process similar to other processes the CAISO has opened up with this regional integration discussion, or is this just informational? What will be the process? I think that would be helpful to know.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Rendell. This is Stacey Crowley. Yes, we plan to go through a stakeholder process similar to what we're doing both with the SB 350 work and other stakeholder initiatives that you might be familiar with. The issue is just timing. We definitely, and I'll get to this a little bit more on slide 11 in terms of the timing, the language of Senate Bill 350 really asks that the ISO bring both a governance modification proposal as well as the study work associated with the language in the bill together at a workshop with the CPUC, the California Energy Commission, and the Air Resources Board. So that's the intention, is to bring both the study work and the benefits of a regional grid and the governance proposal to that workshop. That workshop is targeted for early June. So what that means is we need to get something out to the public on the governance proposal as soon as possible, but there needs to be some initial consultation, which is what we're doing now, to understand the basic framework and issues associated with a change in modification, including conversations with the states, including the state of California. So absolutely, this would go through a stakeholder process where we envision bringing a straw proposal out, post that, allow time for review, ideally hold either a webinar or an in-person meeting to have discussions on that, allow for comments and the potential for revision to that. That process. So absolutely it would be something that would be in the public.
Thank you. And then the next question is about your bullet point, compliance with states' lawful policies. What determines whether a policy is lawful or not, or did you mean legal policies?
I think we just meant that any policies that are set forth in either state statute or regulations. I don't know if we meant anything more than that, but just to
okay,
make sure
well,
that we're adhering to all the policies that utilities and others would adhere to as well.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, we'll go ahead and take the next question.
This is Mary Jane Coombs from the California Air Resources Board. I actually have a question from the first part of your presentation with respect to the body of state regulators. I'm wondering what agencies and individuals make up that body and where we can find information on the body on CAISO's website.
Sure. Thanks, Mary Jane. This is Stacey Crowley again. The body of state regulators is made up of one utility commissioner from each state in which the EIM operates. So right now there are eight states. That's California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, Nevada, and Arizona. So all of those states have balancing authority areas such as Pacific Corp, NV Energy, Arizona Public Service that have signed implementation agreements or are participating in the energy imbalance market today, that gives them the ability to have a commissioner sit on that body. That body is an advisory body to both the EIM governing body and the ISO on EIM-related issues. The chair, Commissioner Ann Rendell, who's also on the call, has convened that group. And I believe each state has also selected one staff member to serve to help the commissioner and facilitate those discussions. Does that answer that question?
In particular, who from California is on the body?
Sure. President Picker is on that body. He serves on that body.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you. Okay, we'll take the next question.
Hi, this is Matt Friedman with the Utility Reform Network, and I have a follow-up to the question that was asked about the first bullet point, which refers to compliance with states' lawful policies. I'm wondering what types of policies are being envisioned here at the state level. Are we talking about policies that relate to the public processes that are mentioned in the next sentence, or are you thinking about resource planning and policies adopted by states and other types of policies that relate to the regulation of load-serving entities?
Thank you, Matt. This is Stacey Crowley. I believe we mean all of those things. So it really is we would be serving our customers as an ISO, and that means any of the utilities that operate in our balancing authority now in California, and any other utilities such as Pacific Corp, who's expressed interest in any of the states that have renewable portfolio standards, procurement policies, all those kind of things, we would just make sure that we are in compliance with those and support those as we can.
Okay, thanks. And I have one other question. The second bullet point references board members who are independent of market participants and other stakeholders. And I'm wondering whether you folks are including state government interests in the definition of stakeholders.
This is Stacey. Thanks, Matt. I would probably just need to verify this with our legal team, but the idea is that if there is a perceived conflict of interest, that they would not be able to serve on this board. I think we've had these discussions even in regards to the EIM governing body, and if there is a stakeholder, potentially a regulator, that might be perceived as a conflict of interest, and that would probably not be allowed. So we have a conflict of interest policy that kind of sets forward several criteria, and I can certainly provide that to you if we need details around that.
So would that mean that a board member who perceives themselves to be representing the interests of a particular state would be effectively disqualified under this standard?
I think we'd have to look at the details there. I don't know if you're asking about an employee of the state or some other kind of person like that, but we might have to think about or talk about the details, and I might need to have my team help me with that. But I certainly.
So, in other words, just to understand where you're going with this, is this meant to suggest that the board members should not see themselves as representatives of any particular interest group or geographical entity, but instead just simply knowledgeable people who bring their best skills to bear and don't really represent anyone or anything in particular?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I imagine everybody brings an interest or perspective on energy-related issues. I think the idea is that you have folks with expertise in a variety of areas. The way we've talked, the nominating committee has talked about this type of thing on the EIM governing body side. They're looking for folks with not only energy market experience, but experience in not-for-profit public advocacy experience, consumer advocate experience, legal and regulatory experience. So I think it's hard to say that if a person brings a particular perspective or opinion that would be a conflict, but maybe we can talk more about that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Great, thank you. I think we still have three questions in the queue. We'll take the next question.
Hi, Stacy. Tony Braun on behalf of the California Municipal Utilities Association. On slide 9, those are the first sort of glimpses that I have seen about particular design elements of governance. And I don't know if those are sort of glimpses of discussions that are about to occur or whether or not we're seeing boundaries of what the governance could look like. And I'm mostly focused on the size of the board in this instance and the non-affiliation requirement. And I will say I don't necessarily have any objection to 7 to 11, but I also don't want to rule out potential other outcomes. And then also I don't think there is a mandate that you have non-affiliated board. Again, I'm not advocating for a stakeholder board, so I'm just trying to assess whether these are parameters that the ISO sees as requirements, or whether this is just a glimpse of where things might go.
Thank you, Tony. This is Stacy Crowley. It really was about establishing some basic guiding principles. I don't think that any of these are set in stone. It was a matter of starting to put a framework around how to look at the design of a modified governance structure for the ISO. Frankly, a lot of the work that the EIM Transitional Committee did, I think, helped us think about this and about these aspects. The idea of an independent board is something that I think, certainly open for discussion, something that I think we found to be of value in the market and something that I think FERC looks at. And so, again, I think none of this is set in stone. The idea of 7 to 11 is really out of practice. With a 5-member board, while not bad, it does limit the ability to have committees and things like that underneath the board and quorum issues and things like that. So, again, these are based on some preliminary discussions we've had with our current board, some of folks around in other states and the governor's office. So that is really the basis for these. They're not set in stone and could be a framework to begin discussions.
Thank you.
Okay. Colin, we'll move to the next question.
Hi, this is Travis Uchi with the Sierra Club. So I had a question on kind of looking down the road on how the first bullet point of compliance with state lawful policies might play out and what some of the kind of sideboards that we set up now, how those get implemented and how they change over time. I think, one of my concerns is that it's admirable to say that we would comply with state's lawful policies. I think in this realm it's not hard to anticipate where different state policies could be in direct conflict with each other. And so I'm just kind of curious how we meet this guiding principle going forward in those circumstances. And then also, how do we set up the governance and guiding principles today in a way that we can have confidence that the states who are joining or California who's spreading out can have assurances that the rules won't change, 5 or 10 years down the road? How do we know that whatever rules we set up can't kind of be just changed in the future?
Thank you, Travis. This is Stacey Crowley again. I think these are all important things to think about and consider as we go through the process. And really, even by, I guess, talking about them today, hopefully gets folks thinking about ways to engage in this discussion and help formulate a proposal that really is robust and is something that we can move forward with. So, we're looking at what other multi-state ISOs have done. We certainly talked to them quite a bit, thinking about some of the ways that they've established these policies and their governance structure to maintain longevity and robustness, et cetera, and we'll continue to do that. But again, I think great questions. Certainly your thoughts and suggestions on that will be helpful as we go through. Laying these principles out is a great way of starting that conversation.
Okay, Colin, how many questions do we have left? Do we have two?
One more in the queue at the moment.
One more. Okay, thank you.
Okay, going now to our next caller.
This is Commissioner Ann Rendall again. I don't think I had any additional questions.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay, Stacey, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll go on to page 10, and we'll still have time for questions here. Page 10 is really just an example of some of the work that we did when we were working with the EIM Transitional Committee and really starting to think about how other ISOs operate. It's important to note, and we can certainly maybe tee up a link to some of these things that were developed during the EIM Transitional Committee work, but the ISO did have some discussions with the other ISOs in the U.S., and we developed a matrix of both governance models and committee structures for the EIM Transitional Committee to review, and all those things were posted publicly at the early stages. I'm trying to think of the month, but certainly it's all available on the EIM Transitional Committee Governance website, and we can maybe provide a direct link for folks. But that matrix of governance models really is helpful to understand the variety of ways these ISOs have developed their governance over time. And even with discussions with them, you get some more of the anecdotal information. But this chart on the lower part of this slide indicates that there are a number of ways to select a board, and each ISO has taken a little bit of a different approach, indicating that there are a variety of ways to get to something that is satisfactory to both stakeholders and states. You'll notice that the California ISO structure is a bit different. The sort of creation of the ISO is in California state statute and does allow for the governor of California to appoint the board members. There is a nominating committee process, a sector nominating committee process, but that does not ultimately, may not ultimately yield a board member position or a slate. The governor can choose anyone, really. But you'll see that there are a variety of ways, and some ISOs take, you know, a multi-pronged approach. I would say that if you were to look at the EIM governance proposal, that might fit under two categories, the first and the third, where you've got a sector-based nominating committee developing a slate, and that slate is, in the first case, approved by the current ISO Board of Governors, and in ongoing cases would be approved by the then EIM governing body. So this is just kind of one example of some of the work and the background that the EIM Transitional Committee looked at, and is something that we certainly can revisit and review and make sure folks are aware of. I also wanted to just note that during the past, I guess, year and a half, 2 years, organizations like the Western Interstate Energy Board, through its PUCEIM group, and that's kind of a piece of the CREPSI committee, and I think even the body of regulators looked at and talked to other ISO representatives to get a sense of their structure, and in some cases it was specific to the regulators' involvement, but in others it was just to learn about the variety of options out there. So that slide 10 was just meant to simulate that and let you know that there is a body of work and certainly study work that's gone into understanding what the options are. On slide 11, I guess I can stop and see if there are any questions on that one slide.
Okay, just a reminder, to enter the queue, you can press pound 2 on your telephone. We'll call on, do we have any new questions? Looks like we do. We'll take the first question.
This is Bill Russell from Wyoming. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Looking at the chart on page 10, I appreciate the comparison of the forms of governance across the different ISOs. My question is more fundamental than that. Are you aware of any other multi-state ISO that is created by a single state statute and where the ISO is so beholden to a single state statutes?
Thanks, Commissioner Russell. This is Stacey Crowley. No, we aren't aware of that. I think for the most part, these other ISOs were created out of regional, you know, power pools and things, and so they developed in a bit of a different way than the California ISO was developed.
Right. And is there any discussion on the table as to whether or not that would be a better model for a Western regional ISO?
Certainly, I think it's a conversation that we can have and one that will need to be had in order to understand what modifications to California state statute would have to occur or need to occur.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it looks like we have one more question in the queue.
Hi, this is Candace Morey from the California Public Utilities Commission staff. I just had a follow-on question. I wasn't figuring out how to raise my hand earlier in the call. But one of the callers, you know, who had mentioned how we assure kind of that rules can stay in place and be robust going forward, and I just wanted to get a little bit more specific in this question. Are you looking at any types of governance structures that would involve giving voting rights or Section 205 filing rights to the states or to an organization of states? And, you know, if so, can you explain that? And if not, I think there's one very big decision on the horizon at the Supreme Court still that will probably do a lot to put in place indications of if or where there's any fence lines around states retaining their jurisdiction to order new construction of renewable or other resources that I would think will have to inform the structure that's developed for this governing body for a regional ISO. If it's not informed by that at all, you know, we might end up building a house where the fence runs right through the middle of it. So I just, you know, the timing for this decision is, you know, on pace with the same timing for potential resolution of that issue before the Supreme Court in the Hughes v. Talen Energy case. So can you just speak to your consideration of those issues? Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Candace. This is Stacey Crowley. Certainly, I think that the concept of having an organization of states or you know, body regulators, whatever we want to call it, I think is an important one and one that we certainly thought of as an important tool, both sort of a two-way tool to allow commissioners and staff to understand the components of the market as well as give feedback on those things. So absolutely, it's something I think should be considered and discussed during this process. As to the timing, I think, you know, there's a lot of things going on. I think what we need to do is look at building something that's robust and also, you know, considering all the things that are happening at the time. I think that's the other hard thing is we don't know what's down the road and what other key issues might be coming up. This is a significant effort that will change the landscape of the regional market, and I think it's an important one to take serious and have a good discussion on.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I guess, you know, you just mentioned an organization of states or body regulators to give feedback, but, I mean, I guess that goes precisely to my concern. Is there, you know, in the current ISO processes, there's really no, you know, formal process or, you know, methods for stakeholders to weigh in other than kind of just filing comments, which may or may not be considered. And I think, you know, there's some concern that in a regional organization, if the only ability to influence proposals that are going before the board is filing comments, that really may not be protective enough of states' individual interests. And I don't think just California's. I mean, I think it would include other states, as you know, the rules for an ISO's energy and, you know, any other markets could evolve in the future. I mean, I think there's going to have to be something more than, you know, we have a similar process as to what the ISO currently does, and, you know, maybe there'll be some advising role for an organization of states. So I would really urge you to think about how a governance model could be structured that would address, you know, the various state concerns that exist around these issues. And, you know, maybe a first step would be to even just kind of soliciting what those are. I'm not sure if that's been done yet outside of the context of just this, you know, these principles.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Candace. We have as part of the, you know, in kind of not as reflected as it should be on page 10, but the idea is that we have looked at really all the structures of other ISOs, and there are certainly organization of MISO states and the regional state committee and SPP, and there's a lot of good models out there that have, they have, you know, decision-making rights and things like that, and certainly we think that's a very important piece to look at. So not to be ignored and one that we have considered and done some initial research on and can certainly highlight those. Either it might already be highlighted in that matrix of the committee structure and governance models.
Any other questions, Candace?
Not right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We did have two additional people enter the queue, so we'll take the next question.
Hello, this is Commissioner Rundahl again, and Candace did ask my question, but that was whether there is any intent in having an advisory or oversight committee. Some of these regional entities have both a membership committee and either an oversight or state regulator committee. And so as you are putting forward your straw proposal or seeking additional comments, I would put my request in, as Candace just did, for not just the structure of the board itself, but what else would go along with that regional ISO RTO organization.
Thank you, Anne.
Great. And one more question, Colin.
Hi, this is Carl Sakella. I think you just got at my question a little bit, Stacy. Earlier, there was some questions about independence of the board members, and just wanted to point out that not only is it desirable that they be independent of any financial conflicts to the market, it's also a requirement that FERC would have. There are not independent boards on any ISO that I'm aware of, and we would have to certainly follow that as well. I do think that the organization that has been established that Ann chairs has been a very vigorous one, and we expect it to continue to be. And frankly, we wouldn't be here, I don't think, had we not had the leadership of the state regulators sort of demanding that we explore this question of regional markets, beginning with EIM. So I'm confident that the people that will be on the Committee of State Regulators are going to be very assertive advocates and will be heard.
Thank you, Carl.
Great. So I think we've addressed all the questions at this time, Stacy, so we can go ahead and move on.
Okay. Let's move to page 11. And this is just a timeline that we developed to make sure we're all kind of moving together, knowing that there are many processes that need to happen to get to a successful implementation. And this is really just a review. This is also posted on our website and will be updated as needed and adjusted, knowing that things are happening fast and that there's enough information in here that may need to change. So, but this is a guidepost. We're using it and taking it very seriously. We do want to attempt to bring both the study work and the governance modification proposal to that joint workshop that I mentioned earlier, which then gets forwarded to the governor's office and then to the legislature. We're hoping sometime in June. So that's really what we're driving towards, as well as making sure that we have these stakeholder processes that to begin to discuss the various market design issues that will allow for a robust regional market. And this, again, this timeline does indicate some dependencies, meaning that we really do need to get some of these key issues in terms of market design and governance discussed and outlined prior to PacifiCorp seeking to obtain some regulatory approvals with their six states. And that's really just reflected in this timeline here. As I said, with the SB 350 study work, they held a meeting, our first stakeholder meeting on February 8th. They plan to hold another meeting to discuss preliminary results in mid-April, again with the goal of an early June workshop in front of the multi-agency, but California Public Utilities Commission, California Energy Commission, and the California Air Resources Board. We are planning to align the governance design stakeholder process with this effort and hope to have out for to review fairly soon. And now I'm going to turn it over to Sarah to really just kind of summarize and discuss the differences, the key distinctions between the EIM work and the regional ISO work.
Great. Let's put that at slide 12. And these are just a few observations. This is not meant to be the totality of key distinctions. You may very well have seen some of your own, but in preparing for this webinar, these are the ones that Stacy and I and our teams landed on. And I think make for some good discussion. So I'll run through these. Stacy may weigh in, and then we can certainly open it again for questions. But in looking at these two different governance tracks, I'd note as a starting matter that the EIM governing body is inherently going to have a delegated authority relationship over the EIM underneath the ISO's Board of Governors. And so in general, and Stacy talked about this earlier in her remarks around the governing body for the energy imbalance market, it's a coordinated and shared relationship. And the exact procedures that are followed really depend on whether or not the proposal that's being considered is primarily EIM, whether it's really about the real-time market, in which case the EIM governing body has an advisory role, or whether the proposal in front of the various governing bodies is hybrid in nature, in which case they really have a shared relationship when it comes to approving those proposals. Ultimately, though, under this structure, the transitional committee that developed the framework for this proposal recognized that there would not be time to deliver a fully independent ISO Board of Governors that would serve the energy imbalance market in the time that it's really needed. And it really is needed as soon as possible because we have EIM entities from other balancing authority areas in the EIM footprint and more announcing their intent to join. And so the delegated authority model pragmatically makes sense for what can be delivered in the time that we're looking at. But the key distinction from what a regional ISO governing body might look like, and again, we're left to speculate somewhat on what that might look like, but ideally we would be talking about an entirely independent board that represents the region generally and would have primary authority over all of the market rules and ISO functions. This necessarily leads me to jump around a little bit in the slide because it calls to question the last bullet on this page, which is whether or not a governing body for a truly independent and regional ISO would necessitate elimination of an EIM governing body, or whether it would be preferable for the two independent board structures to continue to exist, with the EIM governing body continuing to have a delegated authority relationship, but underneath an independent regional ISO. These are really issues, I think, for discussion and for thought. Nothing that's been determined or nothing that's being proposed, but in considering these different potential futures, this is a question that certainly I have had and I know others have had too, and I think as the pathway for regional independence in the ISO is undertaken and we begin to put more structure around what it might look like, I think this picture will become clearer and these discussions are definitely going to occur. Another key difference, obviously, is timing. Stacy walked us through the timing for both tracks. And we're currently working towards seating an EIM governing body by summer of 2016, and by all accounts, we are on track and making progress towards that goal. The goal for the regional ISO is sometime in 2018, ideally or aspirationally, and Stacy also talked about that schedule. So there's definitely a difference in timing. One thing they have in common is that they would be comprised of representatives from the region as a whole and not California only. So those were some of the distinctions we thought of. We certainly would appreciate any other observations on this front, but we wanted to give folks some material so that they can really differentiate and put in their minds where these two tracks fit, because as I mentioned at the outset of this webinar, because the tracks are both underway, some much more advanced than others, there is the potential that they could be conflated or confused. And this was our opportunity to try to put them in their different buckets and also to answer any questions that you might have, which is my prompt to have Christina see if there are any questions on the line.
It looks like we do have someone in the queue. So, Colin, if you can go ahead and open up the phone line, and just a reminder to identify yourself before asking your question.
Hey, this is Tony Braun again from CMUA. Sarah, the bullet on the continuation or modification of the EIM governing board, is the thinking that that issue will come up within the context of this conversation or be left to the ISO governing board whenever it's established?
Tony, and you probably may have more distinct memories than I as being the newest and last member of the transitional committee that you also sat on, but as far as I understand it, the transitional committee proposal contemplates, and Stacy did mention this a little earlier, the need for the EIM governing body to sort of self-examine if different significant events occur, and that was fairly loosely defined as far as I know, but I do know this, that when they came up with that trigger, PacifiCorp had announced its intentions to look at it. So that was certainly in the mind of the transitional committee as a reason that the EIM governing body might do some self-introspection. That's the way it's currently set up. By no means should this bullet on the slide indicate that there is a decision about who's going to consider it and under what timing. I don't believe, if I was to speculate me personally, that it's an explicit part of the regional ISO work. I think this is an issue for much further down the road, but in putting together a webinar that compares and contrasts these two things, that question sort of naturally occurred to me, and one I thought might make for some interesting discussion, and from your question I can see it's making your own wheels turn as well.
Yeah, so the I'm just glad to hear it's not going to happen the next 60 days. This is a question that comes up in discussions across the industry. How is the EIM going to be governed in the context of a potential regional ISO? And so it's something that's on the minds of many, and I just wanted to make sure that it was given the proper consideration. And didn't, I mean, my own personal preference, while we're talking about personal preferences, is to not be shoehorned into the immediate conversation. I had a quick follow-up on an earlier slide, and maybe this is for Stacy. There's a simple bullet in there that references the workshop requirements under SB 350, and I was wondering if there's any more detail on that. Off the top of my head, I believe the statutory language is at least one workshop, which doesn't certainly require multiple workshops, but I didn't know whether the state agencies were proposing and multiple workshops. I mean, it is a fairly important issue, or just whether there were any determinations about how and when that was going to proceed.
Thanks, Tony. This is Stacy Crowley. Let me get back to you on that. I think what the idea is that we're trying to target a date that is one date. I can discuss with the other team members if further details were discussed around what that looks like, if that's the only one, that kind of thing. So certainly, I think as soon as we can provide those details.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. We'll take the next question.
Hi, this is Matt Friedman again, and I'm interested in exploring a little bit more the points on page 12 where there's an attempt to distinguish the EIM versus regional ISO governance. And the way I read it, the only real distinctions will be that the EIM governing body had delegated authority, and there's a timing difference, which is the EIM governing body would be in place in 2016, and a regional ISO governing body would be in place later. But I don't really see any suggestion that the compositions of the boards, the requirements for independence, the process for nominations and approval, that any of that stuff would be meaningfully different. Am I missing something here, or would it be fair to say that the process for selecting EIM board members would be comparable to the process for selecting board members of the regional ISO under the proposal that's being fleshed out here.
Matt, this is Sarah Edmonds from PacifiCorps. I'll weigh in, and Stacy, I'm sure, will have something to add, but I think this slide is what I developed it. It's what I know today. It's my observations about distinctions I see today. I think what the regional ISO board looks like, its structure, its composition, its procedures, is yet to be determined. Stacy's talked about a few things today of things they're considering, and I would say my observation is that it's all being considered. The EIM work that's been done is very good work, very valuable and good work, and it should certainly be considered along with a range of other considerations on what that future regional ISO board might look like. So please do not interpret, because this slide has limited bullets, that this is the totality of the distinctions. Far from it. This is what I was able to prepare for discussion today as some observations for people to kind of differentiate as they move forward, particularly if they're involved in one, the other, or maybe even both of these efforts.
Okay, well, I get that that's not the totality of differences, that there might be a different number of people. They might have different protocols for their meetings. But I have to tell you that looking at this presentation, it's hard not to come away with the perception that the way that members will be selected is essentially identical, and that there's really not much room to maneuver here on putting in a board that represents anything other than a bunch of independent individuals who have no allegiance to anyone or anything or any state in particular. It's really hard not to come to that conclusion. So I don't see much of a meaningful difference here, but maybe I'm missing something.
Thank you, Matt. This is Stacy Crowley. I think we don't have anything in here that talks about what a new regional governance might look like, other than those basic guiding principles. And so maybe the absence of information might lead you to conclusions, but that's not the intent. I think the idea is that this is just the start, and that there should be conclusions drawn from any lack of bullets in this presentation. I think one shouldn't assume that the EIM governance structure is what could potentially be the solution, the right solution for regional governance. So I think certainly there needs to be further discussion on that, and nothing is really determined in this presentation here. It's just the start of a discussion.
Okay, thanks. I guess what would be helpful in the future for future updates would be if there are different potential models that are being considered, even as straw men, that would be useful to look at to see even what.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll definitely try to lay that out for you, so that there are a range of possibilities, as Sarah discussed, and certainly while the work that went into the development of EIM governance was. They looked at a range of possibilities and ended up with a consensus approach. That same thing will have to occur for a full ISO governance modification.
Okay, thank you.
It looks like we have three more questions, so we'll take the next question.
This is Commissioner Ann Rendall. Again, and this is a timing issue. I've raised this issue, and I know others have as well, just sort of a fundamental concern about all of the work that's being done on policy issues and the studies, which I know are being done pursuant to California legislative direction, but all of the policy changes that are being made to try to coincide with a date to allow PacifiCorps both to submit its filing with FERC and to bring proceedings to the states. In fact, the slide 11 says timeline designed to allow PacifiCorps to obtain state regulatory approvals before the end of 2017. And there is a lot that's being addressed that's very detailed and in some places very complicated. on a very expedited time frame, and without a regional governance established, which is contrary to the way other ISOs have been created in a regional manner. And I just, again, express my concern about the process in which this is going forward.
Mr. Rendell, thank you for that comment. You and I have discussed this timing challenge before, and I appreciate you noting it for this group that's gathered today. We certainly acknowledge that there are these timing challenges associated with the market design revisions that are being contemplated in various stakeholder initiatives and would ultimately culminate in tariff revisions needed before potentially there is a governance structure in place, needed before that is in place. And we recognize that. We realize that that is certainly a challenge, and ideally you would want potentially to have all of that settled. Nevertheless, in our consideration of the history around efforts to regionally organize and how difficult that is, we have certainly acknowledged that setting a schedule is an important part of this. The schedule is represented in the slides, and it is our schedule that we're working towards. However, it doesn't mean that it wouldn't be adjusted if developments change. We realize that we would be seeking approvals in our states to regionally integrate, and that would need to include necessarily an overall package that demonstrated a net benefit, and that would be inclusive of what we believed the cost would look like, and those are directly driven from the tariff revisions, as well as a governance structure that states felt was acceptable. So ultimately, the buck stops there. However, I would note, and I have said this continually, there are meaningful opportunities now to weigh in on what the tariff revisions should be and what they look like through the ISO stakeholder processes. And although that is happening before an independent governance structure, and although we acknowledge those tariff revisions are set to go in front of the current ISO Board of Governors, we still full-heartedly believe that those are meaningful opportunities. That's where the substance is being primarily designed and discussed. We're an active stakeholder in those efforts. Many of our states are too, and we really appreciate that involvement. It's truly critical. So my response, Commissioner Rendell, is to acknowledge the concern. We certainly are aware of it. I appreciate you noting it here. I'm encouraging involvement in those stakeholder processes, and noting that in addition to the ISO-led stakeholder process, PacifiCorp has initiated its own engagement opportunities with all of our stakeholders. There is certainly process through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that provides for notice and comment there. And then finally, there are those state approvals and those engagements that are yet to come.
Okay, we'll go ahead, Anne, I'm not sure if you're done. We'll go ahead and take the next question. It's like we have three more questions.
Hi, this is Rachel Gold with the Largo Solar Association. I'm wondering if you could provide more details on the next steps for the governance development. I'm not sure if I missed that in the presentation. Thanks.
Hi, Rachel, this is Stacey Crowley. We did refer to it a little bit on page 11 on the timeline, and that is meant to just to really reflect the idea that the governance stakeholder, the process around developing the governance proposal would be in line with the work on the SB 350 study work so that they could come together in a early June workshop. While we haven't picked out specific dates or selected specific dates for a release of a document and comments and that kind of thing, we intend to do that soon after some additional consultation with some folks and get that out. So keep in mind that the idea is that the goal is to align that with the study work process to get to that early June meeting.
Okay, thanks. I'll stay tuned.
Great. All right, looks like we have one more question.
Hi, this is Ezra Hausman working with Sierra Club. My question is actually was very similar to Rachel's, but I kept my hand up just because I'd like to emphasize that I think one thing you're hearing here is that many stakeholders feel like the ISO governance issues are very different from the EIM governance issues. And so we're very interested in having a robust process where we can have input, and it just looks like a really short time frame in the box on the time scale. So we want to make sure we have an opportunity to review and really participate in that process.
Thank you, Ezra. All right, Colin, is that all we have in the queue?
Correct. Not seeing any additional questions at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you. So just a little, if you want to get some background on EIM governance, we do have some resources available on the ISO website. We have, on this page, we have links to the governance documents that were approved by the ISO Board of Governors in December 2015. We have a link to the governance proposal that was approved in September 2015. We also have a designated EIM governance development webpage, so you can kind of see the full history of the development of that governance proposal. These are some other online resources that are available on the ISO website related to regional integration. We have the regional energy markets page. This is actually where you're going to find information about SB 350, the governance for now. You know, the PacifiCorp integration benefits study is also linked on this page. We have a couple of stakeholder initiatives, active stakeholder initiatives, one for the transmission access charge options, and then we also have the regional RA initiatives that are active. We're starting up soon, we'll be starting up the greenhouse gas compliance initiative as well as the metering enhancements. Those will be starting at the end of February. So that all of the active initiatives are available on the stakeholder processes webpage. For information about upcoming meetings, you can find those on the regional energy markets webpage as well as the stakeholder initiative pages, but if you're not able to locate the information there, you can go to our public calendar to find out how to participate in our web conferences and other ways to stay connected with the ISO. We have a smartphone app, the ISO Today app, and we also have, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We have been automatically subscribing stakeholders who have participated in the TAC and the regional RA initiatives as well as the SB 350 meetings, and we do host biweekly calls the first and third Tuesday of every month that are related to the regional integration effort. Those are very high-level calls, more about timelines that are associated with the stakeholder initiatives as well as the SB 350 and regional governance stakeholder engagement activities. So we'll just check again to see if we have any other questions, Colin, before we conclude the call.
Yes, we do have another caller in the queue. Going on to our next caller.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jerry Nurse with Energy Strategies. I appreciate the call today and the dialogue. Just wanted to follow up on a point I must have missed. Between now and the point in time where there is a proposal in place for discussion and a workshop, will the ISO be putting together any other of the typical stakeholder process pieces, such as comment forms? Where would you want comments? Do you have a form, or do we just have an open window to be able to provide comments between now and the time where a draft or when a straw proposal is put together? Just wanted to get a better idea for what the timeline is going to look like between.
Thank you, Gary. This is Stacey Crowley. I think expect something similar to the structure we're setting up for the SB 350 work. I think we would ideally post a document, allow for some time for initial review, host up either a call or a stakeholder meeting, and then additional time for comments. And I imagine we would put together a template where you could provide comments in a template format, and then obviously some time for us to review those comments and put something, a revised document out. So I apologize, we don't have a time yet to that, but expect to see something like that soon. When we do have it, we'll try to provide as much advance notice on all of these things as we can, and we'll certainly post documents, make sure that we offer webinars as well as in person if we do an and just try to be have everything available for you to see on our website.
Okay, so just to finish up, there will be another chance to offer comment between now and the time that the draft proposal is put together. Did I catch that?
Well, certainly any comments now are welcome, and I would suggest you can either contact me or through that regionalintegration@caiso.com email, that all gets funneled and we get those notifications. So certainly any method that provides comment now or along the way, we're happy to have and take into this process. There'll be a more formalized review and comment period when we do put out a straw proposal.
Thanks, Stacey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to follow that, if we do have any, if there are any opportunities for stakeholder engagement, we certainly would issue a market notice and provide the links to the documentation in those market notices and any dates where we'll ask you to engage, when comments will be due, and when meetings will be held. So that will be communicated through a market notice. Again, I want to remind everybody that we did record the meeting today, and that will be available on both the PacifiCorp OASIS website as well as ISO's website on the Regional Energy Markets webpage. So look for that in the next couple of days. It does take a little time for us to get the edited version post to our website, but for those who weren't able to participate in the call today, or if you want to go back and review the discussion, that will be available to you. So Colin, do we have any other questions in the queue?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We really appreciate all the comments. Again, Stacey mentioned, if you do have any follow-up questions, you're welcome to send those to the regionalintegrations@caiso.com mailbox. So thank you, Colin, and have a great day, everyone.